In a world where multi-million dollar satellites are used to find Tupperware in the woods, through the magic of the internet, which is just a series of tubes, coming to you from the surface of planet Earth, the Slaga Geocaching Podcast is about to begin.
You are listening to episode number 71 of the Slaga Geocaching Podcast, produced by Paul Konopacki of St. Louis, Missouri. Part 1 of 2. Interview with father and son geocaching team, Yoa Tag and Lobox.
We are back indoors at my house for this interview with father and son geocaching team, Yoa Tag and Lobox. Son Andrew has lived in the St. Louis area since 2002, but only recently became an avid geocacher. Father Tom was already a geocacher in North and South Carolina when he recently moved to the St. Louis area. They have quickly acclimated themselves to the Slaga way of life and have been eager to volunteer their time to give back to the hobby. I split the interview up into two parts. This is part one. Stay tuned for the end of the podcast for a couple of promos for other geocaching podcasts. During the podcast, when you hear this sound, it means I'm going to describe what you hear next. When you hear this sound, it means there has been a change in the conversation. I'm here with geocaching father and son team. New to St. Louis area, one is new to caching, one is not.
I'm Tom Sanger. Geocaching name is Lobox, L-O-B-O-C-S. A name that I used in a online fantasy game that my son and I played years ago. Backwoods is COBOL, which is a programming language that I do on my job.
I am Andrew Sanger, Tom's son. I go by the geocaching username Yoa Tag. My name backwards is Gateway. Doesn't have anything to do with the St. Louis area.
Did you say you've been using that for years?
I have been using that on our game, which was on the original Apple IIgs. Don't want to date ourselves too much. Ever since then, I've used it from everything on the internet that I use. So if you see the name Yoa Tag, more than likely it's me.
You originally were from the East Coast, but you come here to St. Louis because your wife's family is from here?
Correct. I lived in North and South Carolina till the age of 21. Then I moved to Cincinnati after I met my wife, Elaine. And after staying there for a few months while she was finishing up school, we moved here in December of 2001 and got married in March of 2002. And I've been here ever since. In March 6th, we had our first child, Sage, also known as Master Kabuki on geocaching.
Tom, the reason you're here?
Reason I'm here is because my wife and I wanted to be back close to our son. He's an only child. When he moved to St. Louis, we had talked about trying to get closer to him. At first, we were hoping he and his wife would move back to North Carolina. And when we realized that wasn't going to happen, then we started talking about moving here. And we've been looking for the last couple of years. I finally found a job the week that my grandson was born. Been here since March. A degree in accounting. But back in 1983, the accounting field was pretty tight, wasn't any jobs, and I just kind of lucked into getting into the programming. It's been, 24 years now I've been doing it. Worked for a couple of companies, did some consulting for about 10, 11 years, went back with another company for about 5 years before we moved here. Now I'm back into doing consulting. I work for a company called Tech Systems. Contract I'm working on is at GMAC right now.
Andrew, can you tell me about your work without having to kill me?
Without delving into too many details, I work at a casino in the St. Louis area. I'm sure if you read some of the logs of some caches, you could pretty much determine which one. I work in the surveillance field. I'm a surveillance operator. I've been with the casino for 5 years now and in surveillance for 2. I started out actually as an EMT at the casino, worked my way up into a supervisor, and then transferred to surveillance. We see a lot of crazy stuff in there, things you wouldn't believe and things you probably would. It's a lot of fun, though.
A lot of watching monitors.
A lot of monitors. It's like people joke, we watch TV 8 hours a day.
I actually have a wiki page, which was very helpful for me in doing my research.
I've been on the internet since probably 1996. I was one of the charter members of the internet company that started down in North Carolina, Internet Blue Ridge. So I was on the internet long before the internet was cool.
It says, I'm a 27-year-old resident of Belle Fountain Neighbors, Missouri.
Pretty recent.
You were here by then. Married in March of 2002.
In North Carolina, I was working in computers. I was a help desk operator at the company Dad used to work for. Moved up here, became an EMT. That led me into the casino field where the pay is actually better than on the street.
Tom, I think there's some association with bowling.
My parents were big bowlers when I was growing up. They were bowling 2 and 3 nights a week. Naturally, I got into it. I've been bowling for over 40 years. I consider myself a pretty good bowler. I was on a regional professional tour for about 4.5 years. Problem was work interfered with it, and I couldn't get out there and bowl as much as I wanted to. I take it seriously. I go to the national tournament every year, which goes around the country. This past year, we were out in Reno. Next year is Albuquerque, and Andrew and I are planning about 11-day trip, driving out to Geo Woodstock in Sacramento, and then down to Albuquerque to bowl for a couple of days.
I've never been to the Bowling Hall of Fame. What is the Bowling Hall of Fame? Just a stone's throw from Busch Stadium?
It's actually in the same building as the Cardinal Hall of Fame. The Bowling Hall of Fame really has the history of bowling in there. All the big names, people like Dick Weber and Pete Weber and Earl Anthony. You can bring up on the computers there any of the individuals who have bowled honor scores, which are 300 games or 800 plus series for 3 games. An interesting place. St. Louis was one of the big bowling meccas back in probably the 40s, 50s. There was a lot of good bowlers that came out of St. Louis.
Tell me a little bit about your family. You have a new son who I guess you even take geocaching.
In March, my son Sage was born. Elaine and Mom took him out to Columbia Bottoms and got the 2 caches that are out there without me. I was working. And then we took him on the 4-generation cache back in June. This fourth one was the recent summer picnic. We don't take him out too much right now. For one, he's only 5 months old. He's a little difficult to work with sometimes. It would make the caching day short. There's way too much bushwhacking and walking involved around here.
So 4 generations be you, your son, Dad, and
my father-in-law.
He's actually the one that showed Dad caching.
We took a trip out to Las Vegas last October. Well, when we were out there, we had rented a car, and it had a GPS in-dash unit. And when we came back, we told my father-in-law about it and said that he needed to get one of those because they do a lot of traveling down in Florida. And when he purchased it, he read an article, I think it was in the Air Force Times, about geocaching. So he looked into it, got involved in it starting about last November, I guess it was. We went down at Christmas time to visit, my wife and I. He took us out geocaching, so I caught the bug. Cache for 3 days down there with him, came back up, and I've been caching since a couple of days before Christmas last year.
What is his geocaching name?
Slow Pitcher. Lives in Florida, lives at a retirement community, has I think about 800 finds, and has put out a couple of dozen caches in the area down there.
He and another guy have started a group down there in their little village.
I had a newbie to start with. Father-in-law purchased it as a Christmas present for us. Great unit, has all the maps in it, very good for driving around and being on vacation. But going out in the field with a $700 or $800 unit that is not waterproof, is not shock resistant, went ahead and I bought a Explorist. That's what I'm using now in the field. In fact, the new V, the Tenor went out on it about a month ago. I've got to send that in and get that repaired or get a new one.
Not to mention it doesn't have a compass feature. When he would get to the cache, it was funny to watch him because he would have the coordinates listed and he would be, well, it's 2 coordinates to the west, and he'd pull out a compass and west is that way and he'll walk over that way instead of just getting a compass out of your GPS and just following it.
Well, the problem with the Nuvi is you have to be walking 4 miles an hour for it to give you a directional signal. But Nuvi is very good. It will pinpoint it. It will take you right to the spot. I've never had a problem.
It's great for getting to the cache location, but getting to the cache is a completely different story. I have two different GPSers. I have a Garmin Vista and a Explorer's 210. Right after I got into it, they were planning on moving out of the house soon. I didn't want to have to drive to their house to pick up the GPS stuff. I wanted to use it by myself, so I started looking around, found a good price on the 210. 2 weeks after I bought it, my grandfather sent me the eTrex. So I have two, and they both have their positives and their negatives. I normally use the 210 because I can actually upload the coordinates into it. The Vista, for some reason, thinks it's 1924, and yet I need to call Garmin. I use the Garmin when we get to a place that we need to project a waypoint because the 210 doesn't have that ability inside it, but the Garmin does. I usually carry both to every cache.
I had a Vista, and for a long time, I didn't know I could project a waypoint on it.
I actually found it accidentally. I was just looking through all the menus. I'm like, project waypoint? Wow.
You do bookmarks a little bit different. Some people just say, okay, here's all the caches within this area. You have bookmark lists where you keep track of your do not finds, your first to finds. What's the definition of an armchair cache?
Came about it just looking around at some caches in the United States, some interesting ones. Apparently, they are caches that you can do sitting at your computer, whether it's using Google Earth or searching the internet. I started doing them on my actual profile, but then I realized that your statistics would just get skewed because the first two I did were in Germany. Being that I've never been to Germany, it would look kind of weird saying I'd been there. I had to set up a new account just for my armchairs. They're a lot of fun, especially if it's a rainy day and you've got nothing else to do. Just pull up one of the bookmarks for armchair caches and try to figure them out sitting at your house. They would have the coordinates listed. It would say either what's the name of the object that's at this location or project from this location and figure out what's at that place. Google Earth makes it a lot easier. There's actually one up in New Jersey where he gives you all these coordinates and you plot it out and you have to tell him what the constellation is of all those plots. It's really fun, really educational in some ways too. Of course, everyone thinks I'm crazy for geocaching while I'm sitting at my computer desk. In all of our geocaches, I'd never gotten hurt other than scratching my back on the first to find, but I'm sitting there in the first armchair cache and I'm playing with a pin that gets stuck to my lip and I can't pull it off, and my wife's just laughing at me that I get hurt armchair caching.
Tom, on your profile, one of your goals is to achieve finding at least 750 caches in your first year. Are you on track for that, or is that still a goal?
Yes, I'm on track. I'm headed toward 500, currently at 440. Being we didn't do any caching this past week, I guess I'm below two a day. If you average a little over two a day, you can do 750 in a year.
And you discovered caching when you were on the East Coast still? So
yes.
You were geocaching in the North Carolina area?
Started down in Florida at Christmas time and probably did about 20 or so during the Christmas weekend. Until we moved here, most of my caches were in North and South Carolina.
We've heard about Tube Torture and Tube Torture 2. I see there's one called Little Tube Torture.
No comparison to the tube torches.
There were tubes involved in some respect?
One tube.
Okay.
It was interesting because coordinates pointed to a drain area. I'm looking at this thing and saying, there's no cache around here. Even jumped the fence to get there to see it. I look underneath the lid and I saw the cache, like a cylinder, but I could not reach it. So I'm saying, okay, how do you get this out of here? Finally dawned on me the name being Tube. So I had to go down the other side of the trail, walk about 40 yards through the 3.5 foot high tube to get to it. Now the ones in the Asheville area, Tube Torture and Tube Torture 2, they are full 5.5 difficulty in terrain. I have not tried them. I had planned on doing it with another guy up North Carolina, but we moved. It is truly Tube Torture in that you are navigating through all the tubes in and around Asheville. I heard that it actually runs underneath the Asheville Mall, the water drainage tubes in that area. Very difficult, from what I've heard. I'm sure there's tubes around the St. Louis area. Every time Andrew and I are driving down the road and see a drainage ditch, I say, yeah, Tube Torture.
Yeah. Let me jump out of geocaching just for a little bit. Baseball and hockey and poker.
I've always been a baseball fan. I've played it since I was a little kid and stopped around high school. Just recently got back into it through umpiring. I umpired this past year near the house. It gives you a completely different perspective of baseball when you're the one making the calls. Watch it a little differently when I see it on TV. It's not just simply the nice hits and the nice catches. It's the good calls and the bad calls. No, I think he was safe, but we'll go ahead and give it to you, ump.
So when they say kill the rough, you say, no.
No, no. I mean, he's human just like everybody else, believe me. But for the most part, they do a really good job. Those of us who work the City League, we look up to those professionals. To do that day in and day out for 6 months out of a year is not as easy as some people think it is. And if you make one mistake on a ball or a strike out of the 400 pitches you see, that's a pretty good day in my opinion.
So what would you feel if it was all electronic?
I wouldn't like it. To be the same as setting up an electronic field goal monitor for football, there has to be that human element involved. And when it goes electronic, then it's not the same game.
Might as well have electronic players and just set up that little board.
There you go, with a little vibrator and a little pinball bat and knock it up the ramp. And might as well.
Might as well sit there and play it on the computer.
There we go.
Speaking of which, you can do that with poker.
When I was younger, we would play the little penny and nickel poker at the table with the family. When we moved up here, it was my first experience in casinos, and oddly enough, when I started at the casino, I had never been inside one. I remembered poker and started playing it, and it's kind of narrowed down a little bit now. We used to go out at least once or twice a week and play and make money, oddly enough. I've had to slack off a little bit now with the kid. Obviously, he can't go in and play, but we're slowly teaching him, so when he gets to be that age, he's the best, hopefully.
Did you forget time in the casino on the cruise ship? You and your cousin hit,
yes, there was a
one
time,
of the slot machines?
Took a family trip on a cruise. I wasn't yet 21 or even 18 for that matter. And I thought I'd play a little bit of the slot machines. Actually won $35 or something. As the quarters are spitting out, I'm worried that I'm going to get caught and I'm going to get in trouble. Luckily, I look around the corner. My uncle's there. He runs over and acts like he hits it right as the guy walks by to check on us. I think that taught me a lesson pretty quickly that it's not something to play with. And getting caught being underage in anything you shouldn't be.
Popularity of poker happened a few years ago, but wasn't that a no-limit Texas Hold'em?
With no limit, at any time you can put all your money into the pot. With limit, it's structured. For instance, if it's a 3-6 game, you can't bet more than $3 at a time or $6 at a time, depending on where you are in the round. It makes the game a little more friendly. Instead of walking in, putting your $200 on the table and putting it in the first hand and losing and walking out, you could probably stay for a couple hours even if you play and just keep putting money into the pot. I don't go to win money. I don't go to become a millionaire because I'm not going to do it spending $3 at a time. I go to have fun and to sit around a table and talk to someone who enjoys the game just like I do.
Here we talk about the escapades of a well-known geocacher from Asheville, North Carolina, known as Ozga. I have a link on my show notes if you want to read the details about his encounter with a official here in the St. Louis area. He became famous here when he had an encounter with a park ranger.
Was it Forest Park?
Queenie Park,
yeah.
A couple years later, I ended up interviewing the ranger who was the one who caught him. And I didn't know it until we were in the middle of our conversation. He says, oh, yeah, I remember him. And he said, I would have given him a break if he had just been honest with me, but he was giving me a story that was a little far-fetched. There was no reason for him to be there in the dark, in the rain.
He's a great ambassador for geocaching, but he put some good hides out.
Is it true he's got one of the most hides? He's got over like 100
Number
hides.
Two in the world or in the nation?
Like
or
second or third internationally.
I know there's a guy in Minnesota called King Boreas, and he's put out over 1,000 in
Gus's
that whole
around
thing.
800. Yeah, last I knew it was 750. Yeah. I'm sure he's put out some since then.
But how do you maintain that? I just put out my third one. I'm thinking, am I going to be able to maintain three?
Yeah.
and the range that he has them, too. And it's not just 800 in one county. I mean, western North Carolina, he's got covered. And it's all the way up into the mountains and... And he's got some here. Every place he goes,
right,
he plants them.
No, around here and probably in most of the other states, he has someone who maintains them for him. And that's probably how he gets away with those. Yeah, I don't see how he can do even 200 in his area.
So you guys feel about travel bugs and geocoins?
I enjoyed retrieving them from caches and moving them along as long as I can help them, you know, with their goals. I've got a couple of them out.
I've got the one that...
His personal one.
Yeah, my personal travel bug that I just finished last night, logging back into all the caches I've done up to this point to keep track of our miles.
What made you want to do that?
Honestly, I'd seen it before and thought it was a good idea. I think just a couple months ago, Cribbage Witch was going through and there was a big discussion on the free list about it and how she could be rediscovering her caches and people confused about it.
And how do you put a travel bug in a virtual?
Right.
And why
right.
is this guy named Paintball going and logging all my archived caches?
Exactly. Probably a bad part about me. When something gets in my head, I have to do it. And I'd been thinking about it for months. I need to do this because it's interesting to see how many miles you have. I'm a big stats guy. Geocaching is not about the numbers, but it's good to see the numbers. I've probably got two or three different scripts and programs to run to get stats on my pocket queries. Thought it'd be interesting to see how many miles we've traveled and to see the nice little lines through Google Earth. So I decided to do it. Finally got the travel bug and just spent several hours in the past 2 weeks getting that back through.
You create like a KLM file that you can then overlay on top of Google Earth that
right.
has the route.
Exactly. The thing you can probably get off any travel bug, you can click view a map or download a map of this.
Oh, you can download
it.
Okay.
Right, and it actually gives you the KLM that you put into Google Earth. Has all the lines from one cache to the next.
If you find an armchair that's over in Germany, does the travel bug get put into that one?
I actually didn't do that. I haven't put them into those. The main account's a little different than my armchair. I like to make sure everything's good in that regard. The Geo Woodstock, when we get close to that, I'm going to start looking for bugs in the area that have goals to get out west so we can hopefully help them along their way.
Have you guys noticed geocoins at all in caches? Because they tend to get picked up and
kept.
Not really moved along.
More yeah, like I've seen a few nice geocoins. There was one I picked up a while back and moved on that was tribute to the person's cat. Huh. It was a beautiful geocoin. Had a picture of the cat on there and a little poem or memento on the back of it. I like the travel bugs and the geocoins, moving them along, and there's some interesting ones. There's some very generic coins. Mm-hmm. And when we did the four generational cache in June, I noticed a geocoin in that website, the caching place. You can buy them for milestones, and it was one for 500. When we did the four generation cache, that was my father-in-law's 500th find. So I bought the coin for the 500 and sent it to him. Hopefully he doesn't move it on.
Yeah, it was meant for him to key, right?
And I said in the card, it's not about the numbers, it's about the memories.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the caches you guys have found and placed. You guys put a bunch out real recently up at...
In Spanish Lake.
Where the fall picnic's going to be held. When they announced it, they asked for volunteers for helping for placing caches, and I think we probably got onto that within 30 minutes of it being posted, saying we'd love to do that, being that that's the closest park to us. It was probably the best news we had heard as far as a picnic location could be. So we sent an email out stating that we would be interested. I think we may have gone above and beyond what they expected by placing 8 of them out there. You know, you look at White Cliff where there was 11 or 12 out there. And when they first announced it, you look and you're like, man, there's only 3 caches here. We need to have something so when people come, it's worth coming.
You have a separate account on geocaching.com just for placing caches?
Yes. It's called Team Sage. Team Sage consists of Lobox, Yowtag, and Mastic Kabuki, which is Tom and Andrew and Sage. Team Sage is kind of named after my grandson. If you look at it, it has a period after each of the letters of Sage, kind of our acronym that sang as our geocaches extraordinaire.
Or geocaching enthusiast, however you want to look at it. It was pretty good that it matched out that way. Dad had some caches placed in North Carolina that he had to pick up or adopt out before leaving. And when we got up here, we thought, well, we're pretty much doing this together. Why do all of our placings as separate names? You know, why not just group together and have one generic name? So if, for instance, one of his caches needs maintenance, I would know about it just like he would. Or if I needed to go in and edit something, I could still do it under that general account that we had.
Compared to North Carolina, how have you found caching different here than there?
Caching in the St. Louis area, on the most part, is in the park. You have to have the permission of the county, the city, the state, whatever the organization is that's running that park. There is very little caching outside of the parks around here. There is some, but very little. In North and South Carolina, I don't even know if they ask permission in the parks to place the caches. They are everywhere and anywhere in North and South Carolina. It's totally different. You can be driving down the road in South Carolina and it'd be in the guardrails, it'd be on the side of the road, in a park, behind a shopping center.
For instance, there's a lot of parks here you can park and hit five or six of them by walking the trail around it, such as Spanish Lake. From what I understand down there, it's less of that. It's more you have to park and get maybe two and have to get back in and drive to hit another one. It's no park and walk and enjoy the actual trip of geocaching.
They do have some parks where they have a series of caches like that. Uh-huh. It's just hodgepodge wherever you want to put them. I was a member of Upstate South Carolina Geocaches. It's a very good organization, very active. They were meeting basically every month for either breakfast or dinner and go out geocaching afterwards or beforehand. A lot of meetups.
So there's always food involved.
Always food involved.
Well, you came to the right place. This concludes the Slogga Podcast. For more information about the Slogga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.
Hello, fellow geocachers. Bass Chaz here, and you may know me as the host of the Granite State Geocachers Radio Podcast. But I'm here to invite you to the grand opening of the Granite State Geocachers org website. That's right, the GraniteStateGeocachers.org website will be going online September 1st, 2007. And whether you live in the Granite State or not, I'm inviting you to come and join us. Check it out. Tell us what you think. That's www.GraniteStateGeocachers.org. Come and join the fun. We'll see you on September 1st, 2007.
Hey, geocachers. We just launched another new podcast.
The Caches Roundtable is a monthly show featuring hosts of the geocaching podcast in a roundtable discussion.
You can find the show at cachersroundtable.com or follow the link in the show notes.
We recorded the first episode at Midwest Geobash, but it was just released Thursday, August 2nd.
This episode features Sunny and Sandy of Podcacher, with Firefly03 and I of the Cachermaniacs discussing GeoSense and some of our geocaching picks.
But being our first episode, we didn't have any listener questions to answer. Send us your questions or comments by emailing cachersroundtable@gmail.com or calling 206-333-1206.
Head over to the website at cachersroundtable.com to download or subscribe today.